Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Anthony Donatelli here once again with another episode of Civil Discourse. I am back with Mr. Dante Ramori. Dante had a lot of stuff that was left off the table, I guess, right? And it was our most listened to episode so far. And since Dante is a therapist, a readjustment counselor with the VA, we have invited him back to maybe kind of circle back to some of the things that he wanted to talk about. So Dante, what do you got?
Yeah, man. So last time we caught up, I tried to express that once we crack this thing open, it's so much more than meets the eye, so much more than people take into consideration. And, I was really, enjoyed our conversation last time.
Yeah. So did I, for sure.
And, I personally just got a lot out of talking about it, you know. And then going back, listening to it and thinking about like some of the important things that we didn't hit on, that one, if there's any veterans out there that are listening to this, I think it'd have value for them to hear. But also for the general public who, again, might not be taking into consideration
right.
some of these things. You know, and we briefly before we got going just started hitting on a couple of them.
Sure.
You know.
And we were pretty much wave tops there. And, you know, we typically like to have a free form open dialogue without like an outline of what we're going to talk about. But I think you do want to have some specific things that you want to hit on during this episode. You want to kind of lay those out for anybody listening so they know exactly what's coming up.
Yeah. And we'll break them down obviously as
sure.
we go. But, so I guess just to jump right in, you know, one of the first things that once I listened to the podcast and then realized we didn't talk about much that I think is so important and maybe undervalued by veterans themselves is the type of camaraderie they had when they were in service. You know, I think that that's especially our generation.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we just trained together, we served together, and when that is, you know, taken away when we get out of service, some people stay connected with the people they served with, but they had this just whole support structure around them of like-minded people, shared experiences. And when that goes away, it's, you know, when a lot of the veterans that come into my office haven't rebuilt that in a meaningful way in civilian life. And that has all kinds of ramifications on their well-being. And I think it contributes to the readjustment challenges that combat veterans experience.
Okay, so I don't want to act just plain devil's advocate here because you do talk about readjustment. So a couple of questions come to mind for me when I hear that. Is it necessary to in the readjustment period, or are you readjusting to something that isn't that? And I guess there's two branches you can take there. That's one of the things that kind of made me while I was in the military and I want to find that again, or I'm not in the military anymore and I need to adjust outside of that. So I can certainly attest to, you know, just my transition is I don't have that. It's just not the way I'm built, in the civilian life. I don't surround myself with a lot of people that I can lean on or can lean on me. I've got a few close ones, but I think I am probably the minority when it comes to that. So I guess there's two different questions or two different branches you can take. How do you deal with those two different branches? Or there may be three or four that you want to talk about. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, having that support network, that there are, you know, different aspects or different values we might find out of having a support. So if we're talking about readjustment, I've seen it frequently that so many veterans think they're the only person going through this. Like what they are dealing with is unique.
Sure.
And then when they sit and talk with someone who tells their story, like, you know, right, the details are different, but the
emotions, maybe.
So many components are the same, you know.
Maybe the physical response, the emotional response, the way you deal with it.
Yeah, just what they're experiencing. They hear someone say it, And for a lot of veterans, just the first time they hear someone else say, you know, talk about the experience that is similar to theirs, you can see things change for them in the way they're perceiving their experience. And then when they have, you know, kind of cliche, but, you know, a battle buddy or two,
sure,
to kind of go through the readjustment process, like, was in the last couple of years, I had, you know, two veterans that got linked up through a program I'm involved with. And then they were kind of encouraging each other to go out and sit through the anxiety to do something that was important. And as long as they were there together, you know, the anxiety that they had in a public area interacting with other people was tolerable. And so then they were able to expand their capacity to do things that they want to be doing in civilian life without feeling the anxiety, the hypervigilance, you know?
Sure, sure. I can certainly see the benefit of that. Maybe knowing that there's someone to pull or push on if you need it. For me, that's, you just described my dog to me. You know, it's not a human person. That's my dog. Mm-hmm. as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah.
He gets me when I have him out in public. If he knows, I don't know how they do, but they do. When I'm super wound tight, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, service dogs have been extremely effective with combat veterans. You know, we see them in the vet center all the time. I've seen lives changed because of service dogs. So yeah, it's kind of a similar thing, you know, someone who can sense your, yeah, and it's crazy. Service dogs are insane. The way they sense the anxiety, I've seen ones trained to like put their paw on a veteran's leg if they sense he's getting anxious or mad.
Sure.
Like crazy. And it works.
Yeah.
And that gives that feedback to the veteran.
Right.
That, like,
right.
Oh, maybe I should check in with myself.
And you know, just for clarity, you know, mine isn't my shepherd isn't a service dog. So right. I would love to be able to get him to that level. And I know there's organizations, I know the Vet Center has a guy, that donates his time and training and preparing the dog to perform essential functions.
Yeah. Operation Dog Tag. They're great. Funny thing about that too, is by the time they're done training the dog, the veteran's kind of been through his own training too. You know, it's mutually, it's a reciprocal process of them training each other. So I've seen lots of benefit to that.
Do you know enough to talk intelligently about that? PTSD dog, what does that mean? Right? Because I see signs. I see it at the VA when I go up there to Grand Man Staff, you know, it says, we welcome service dogs that are trained to perform a specific function. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean for someone who doesn't have a physical ailment? You know, like I'm not missing a leg or an arm.
Yeah. So actually not through the Vet Center, but through my nonprofit work, we've come up against, issues with service dogs. And the way that the ADA writes it up is, you're really kind of limited on what you can ask about a service dog. And what even the training, there's no set standards for the training of a service dog. It's kind of loose. So I've seen well-trained, you know, highly functional service dogs that are definitely operate like doing a service
sure.
for that veteran. And then everything from a service dog that's wearing a vest but doesn't even have the minimum training standards
right.
to be in a public space.
What are some of those things that a service dog, I mean, your area of expertise is obviously PTSD. I know you mentioned the dog puts a paw on the foot, but what else is there? I mean, what can that dog do to help facilitate that one veteran to kind of reel back in off of an emotional experience?
Yeah. And so again, like without even being trained, just the presence,
sure.
You know, it's like I've seen veterans who I've worked with for a while. They're pretty isolated, not willing to maybe go to different function the vet centers offer or our nonprofit partners offer. Then they get a service dog and it's almost like they have a little bit of, safety there. You know, they feel, it just kind of makes them feel more comfortable to have that. And then again, without even the service dog being that trained, as long as, you know, obviously it has minimal behavioral standards.
Right. It can't bite anybody or be aggressive, right?
So without even it being that trained, it also kind of provides a calming source, right? Just being able to pet your dog and focus, like, you know, because what with PTSD, and we talked about this a little bit, but oftentimes we get in these public places and our radar is just pinging, man. Our hypervigilance is going nuts. But then if we can find something to anchor our awareness and anchor our attention, it tunes that down a little bit. So again, without the service dog even being trained, it can give us something to anchor us in the present moment or to focus our energy on that helps us maintain in that environment. And then again, without the service dog even being that trained, most dogs still got to go outside and walk. They need exercise.
Sure.
So then a veteran who was isolating before and had no reason, you know, their own well-being wasn't reason enough for them to get out of the house and do anything.
You're caring for something else again, I think, which wraps us right back into the camaraderie that you started this on.
Yeah. And then you go just to finish off your question. And then what I've seen from highly trained dogs is that, they have that capacity to, I know this isn't just about veterans, man. I just think it's about humans in general, but a lot of us have a low sense of self-awareness or a low awareness of our internal environment. So you see it all the time. People who are on the outside are just acting, you know, I just was listening to this funny thing about, say maybe a family is at the beach and something's going wrong. And then instead of enjoying their day at the beach, you see dad freaking out over something that's, he probably has low awareness that what his, the manifestation of his internal environment. So what a service dog can do, is they are aware probably before we are that we've been hijacked by an emotion, by a reaction.
Sure.
And can help ground us, you know, so they put their paw on, they might have other ways of signaling. They might even look like, timid, you know, and I've seen that with a lot of veterans when they see their dog getting timid, they feel, bad about the way they're reacting to something. And it causes them to kind of have a shift in there and try and calm themselves down and focus their energy on being present and getting out of that emotional state so they can come back to the present moment. So for me, the main thing I've observed is just a grounding the grounding part and just increasing the awareness of what's going on for the veteran so they can kind of come back to the present moment, identify what's going on.
Okay. So we've covered canines pretty well. How does that, and I guess that could be camaraderie in a sense, but how do you, I mean, do you drive people to, is that something that you strive to have them do with another person? Or I know the vet center has a lot of group interaction. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the foundation of that?
Yeah, and that's really like, you know, we talked about the groups, we talked about the whitewater raft and the skiing, you know, that's kind of how we wrapped up. That's really the justification for those programs is we know the therapeutic benefit of connecting with others, building a social support network, having social interaction. So that's the justification for that. And then you see the benefit when relationships are built through those programs where even outside of the vet center, there's ongoing support and interaction. You know, and just like in our group last night, there's one group member who texts the whole group to say, hey, group tonight, remember? And then the guy's like, you know, hey, we have something going on, family or whatever. I'll be there. And then it starts to build accountability, you know? And I think that's the thing of it, maybe not just a veteran thing, just a human thing, but for a lot of people, they're more likely to be accountable to someone else than they are to themselves.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
There's that part. But then also I think the thing too is then, you know, we hit on veteran suicide and, you know, I've seen this as well is where when you go down to that place where you're in such a dark place that seems like the only viable option. And then you remember maybe a buddy you can reach out to and you call that buddy and the buddy's like, man, we got to do something. I'm going to come pick you up and get you out of the house or even take you to the VA. I've seen that. And then that guy's pissed, like, man, why'd you take me to the VA?
Right.
But so, he's alive.
Let me ask you this, though. So what's the likelihood? I'll start with, and you know this well, that there are people that I've been friends with that have exercised that as, you know, that was, they thought that was their last option. And so they took their own life. And, you know, for the folks left behind, you would always like to think, you know, this dude knew that he could call me. And I think there's a bit of beating up that goes on that, you know, I should have seen something or I should have known something. But let's say that veteran does reach out, or anybody, let's not even put the veteran tag on it. If you're considering taking your life and you're in that dark spot and they do reach out to somebody, what are the chances that they actually say, this is what's going on in my head and I'm going to do this? Or is it just maybe a call in the blind and they're wanting some to talk to somebody and not really spill out the motives behind the call? How do you recognize that? And do you have any statistics on that?
No, I wouldn't say I have any statistics, and I don't even know if any exist.
Or how you could track them. That'd be a difficult one to find, I think, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my mind goes a couple different directions, and how I operate, whether we're talking about, trying to, create the potential for a veteran to prevent his or her own suicide.
Sure.
It's about a potential. So in the vet center and in my work, I'm trying to increase the potential that if they get to that place, that it doesn't happen.
Right.
But obviously it's not a silver bullet. There's no way to prevent that. And so then if they have, some resources in mind, then hopefully they use them. And then they maybe pick up the phone and they call that friend when they're in the dark place. But then again, we're talking potential. Are they going to be able to communicate what's really going on for them, or are they going to, not communicate, you know? And so, and this is, again, this is like one of those things where we talk about one thing and it cracks into a thousand other things.
Sure. Sure.
And humans, I believe, I've observed, are notoriously very ineffective at expressing their needs and in a way that's really helpful, you know. And so, and one of the things that keeps me functioning as a mental health person in the mental health field is to remind myself that everyone's behavior is an attempt to get a need met. And a lot of people just are very poor at getting their needs met. So where I'm going with this is that if someone is engaged in services with me or my colleagues, hopefully we're expanding their ability to get their needs met and to communicate what's going on for them, and then ask for the support they need, ask for the resources they need, and then hopefully we can prevent them from making a bad decision. Maybe that's not even suicide, right? Maybe that's
right.
Going out and just getting hammered drunk or getting arrested or being violent, but it's all what's going on for that person in their internal environment that's manifesting in these behaviors, and what kind of needs are they trying to get met?
Sure.
You know, are they trying to calm themselves down? Are they trying to just deal with this anxiety? What, you know, there's so many things it could be. But again, the hope is just to increase the potential that they make a choice that preserves their life, you know?
You know, after I listened to our last podcast, one of the things that kind of showed up for me, and it's a little bit of lecturing, I guess, on my part. And I don't know you can slap me around if this is way out of line, but as a police officer, I served as a cop for about 5 years. I came across veterans in a criminal sense, you know, well, in a violation of law somehow, you know, don't go to the extreme and think it's, you know, doing horrible, but they would blame their behavior on X, Y, and Z. A lot of time it was, you know, I'm a veteran, I have PTSD, and there's no accountability for that. And that, it being a veteran and, you know, having gone through my own struggles, that's always not set well with me. And when someone kind of just wholeheartedly, you know, puts the blame of personal behavior on past service, is that anywhere within the realm of this conversation that we can touch on as far as maybe camaraderie and seeking services? How do we own our own actions? And I think, and so let me preface this. The only reason I say that, because if you allow yourself to detach from a behavior completely, it's going to repeat itself, right? If it's easy to blame it on X, Y, and Z, then you're not responsible. And I think that's with a lot of people, not just veterans, but since we're here talking about veterans with, you know, post-traumatic stress, I was just wondering if that's got a place in this conversation at all.
I think it's got a huge place, man. I think it cracks one thing into a thousand other things that, and so here's one thing, I'm really passionate about. And I think it ties in with this, and I think I can connect these thoughts pretty well, is that I have seen many, many veterans. My clients are just people coming on the vet center, or even when I'm up at the VA for my own services.
Sure.
Wearing that dysfunctional veteran medicated for your protection, or some other variation of that message. And man, I can't tell you how much... I don't like that mindset, that message, you know. And I think it's the similar idea that can be taken to an extreme is just not taking ownership of our behavior because we have a diagnosis or we have certain experiences. And to caveat that, just to be clear, that there are times when every human being is hijacked by their emotions,
sure,
or hijacked by a physiological reaction or a thought or what any of these other internal experiences we have. And so there are times when people legitimately have lost control of their behavior, and it is due to a diagnosis they have, just to keep this conversation. But there's also times where we just let ourselves off the hook because of our experience or because, sure, of our diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's pretty problematic. And when, and it can, or that can be problematic. And what I try to communicate to my veterans right from the beginning is, one of the first and foremost things we got to do is to, take full responsibility for our behavior. And so that's anything we're doing with our mouth, our feet, or our hands. If we can just take responsibility of that, then, or try to do our best to control those things, then we can start to work on our internal environment and try to separate the connection between thoughts, emotions, memories, physiological reactions, and our behavior.
So one of the things that I know you and I have worked on, and the first time we did it, I felt stupid as all get out. And since, you know, prior to us actually sitting down and hitting record on this thing, you had said you want to give the listeners a tool. You know, if there's anything that someone can take away from this, maybe it's a benefit that they can actually put to use in their own life rather than talking about them. We're talking with them now. And one of those things that you did, you know, you told me to sit in the chair comfortably with my feet flat on the floor. Can you walk through that process? Because you just got done telling me that they have to take responsibility for behavior, and then you work on the internal afterwards. But in our own sessions, you've really worked on, we have worked on knowing, you know, being able to forecast that behavior before it ever manifests itself. So would you walk through that process with someone who maybe has no clue what we're talking about?
Yeah. So really that process, you know, in my field could be called mindfulness, is what they often call it. For me, I like to just communicate it as developing awareness. And you might identify with this. I'm sure if there's veterans out there, they'll identify who've been through this, they'll identify with this, but, or maybe, you know, it's just a human being thing. So when we stop for long enough and just observe our internal environment, most of us notice it is chaotic. And that's just for humans in general. Then you throw in combat experience, all the stuff that we've talked about last time that creates the PTSD experience. When you stop and just observe that, actually for a lot of people, it's really unpleasant the first 100 times they do it.
Sure.
Because they realize all these thoughts and all these emotions and all these reactions and all these judgments and all these things that are just floating around in our head all the time. And most of the time, we're not even aware of it. So we're just getting pulled around by our thoughts, by our emotions, by memories, by sensations or physiological reaction to things. And those things are kind of just dominating our behavior. And so that process is to just sit, you know, the way I tend to do it, mostly because of what's worked for me, but I see it work with a lot of my veterans. So most of the time it's grounding ourselves, using our breath as an anchor, and then we can observe how chaotic our internal environment is.
Walk through that though, because that I can understand as a clinician, you understand the words you just said, but someone who doesn't understand what you just said, what's that process using your breath as an indicator, as a tool?
Yeah. So, you know, how I would walk someone through it. So I'll give maybe a 2-minute version
sure.
here and see how it goes. Would be to sit in your chair, with a posture that's not overly rigid, but not slouched, almost like there's a piece of string coming down from the ceiling and gently holding your head up, with your feet flat on the floor. And I like to start with the feet because it's like we can still be in our body, but it's as far away from our thinking brain as we can be while still observing our body.
Sure.
So really pushing our feet into the floor, feeling that surface underneath us, feeling the tension in our feet. A lot of us, been my observation, a lot of people's feet are like clenched, like they're trying to hold on to the planet, like they're about to fall off at any minute.
Okay.
You know, so they can spread your feet out and relax our feet, and then just kind of keep bringing that awareness up to the lower leg, the upper leg, to where our ass meets the chair. Notice the chair supporting our weight. Checking in with our abdomen, chest, shoulders. And part of the thing is just most people don't realize how much tension they're carrying.
Sure.
At any given time. And I can't tell you how many times I've had veterans sitting in my office who were literally white knuckled. They were clenching so tight and they have no awareness that they're carrying that much tension. And then, you know, another thing that we didn't talk about last time is the chronic pain that most veterans experience, or many veterans experience. When you have that tension, that pain is going to be amplified because every muscle in your body is just pulling tightly. There's not relaxed. And so we can just try and release some of that tension. And then...
Can I pause right there? Because as you were talking about that, and I'm trying to follow along with what you're saying, you know, check in with your feet. Now what's going on in your lower legs? I can feel that, right? Cause I've been through this exercise with you before. I know you talked about the realization of that tension, but is there any secondary and third order effects to actually, I mean, is it a calming exercise in its own right, simply because you're becoming aware, maybe more mindful of what's happening in your own system?
Yeah. How I present it is, especially the first couple times, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're just getting started by developing the awareness. And then we can start to work on the ability to release tension, to help our body settle into the present moment. And this same idea goes when we get to talking about becoming aware of thoughts and emotions. Is first thing, we just need to gain awareness of what is going on in our internal environment. And then we can start to develop our ability to relate to it more effectively.
Sure.
And so, yeah, the first, you know, and maybe for some time, is just to be able to sit in awareness of our body and our internal environment. And then hopefully eventually we can create space between what's going on in our minds, you know, or what's going on in our emotions. And then once we create space, then we're not so attached. We're not so, like the way I like to think about it is we're not so welded to our emotions. We're not so welded to our thoughts.
They're not facts anymore.
They're not facts. We recognize thoughts as thoughts, emotions as emotions, and physiological responses as physiological responses, memories as memories. You know, that's one of the big things.
Well, they're not mandatory. Maybe I said facts, but they're not mandatory with any given situation. This given response or this given thought process is no longer mandatory given a situation. I'm still struggling with that. And I struggle with it a lot because I'm kind of hardwired. I'm no kid. And I know this is one of the areas you wanted to slap me around is I do believe a lot of me is just given, you know, if this happens, this is going to happen. It's cause and effect. 2 + 2 is always going to equal 4. And trying to find a way to make 2 + 2 = 3 is a little bit different. You know, it's difficult. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah. And again, man, like every one thing cracks into 1,000 things. So that this conversation could be, important.
If you don't want to dig into that, then
I do want to dig into what you were just saying and I can finish up this process just a little bit.
Sure.
But, what you're saying is, so valuable and you know, you could probably pick up any self-help podcast or book and find this pretty quickly. The difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. And why I think that's important is that a fixed mindset is so detrimental to our functioning. That this is just the way I am. This is just the way things are. You know, like one thing just using myself as an example, is I picked up a trying to learn Spanish course years ago.
Sure.
Didn't have the focus or didn't give it the right due. And then I just decided I can't learn Spanish. It's just silly, right?
Right.
And so then recently I picked it up and I'm like, I'm going to learn Spanish and I'm just going to relax and, you know, give it its time. And I'm picking it up pretty quickly. But for years I carried around that fixed mindset, but that can apply to anything. Like this is just how I respond to X. This is just how I am. This is just how I see the world. And then we don't give ourselves any place to grow. And so a big part of the work I would say is helping people develop a growth mindset that we are not static creatures. We're always growing. That really greases the groove to promote growth, to find a meaningful readjustment.
I keep on taking you off topic. So continue with the checking in and how that helps.
All right, so once you've scanned your whole body, then we bring our awareness to the breath. And why there's many, many reasons why I like the breath. One is most of us undervalue the simple act of breathing. It's one of the main parts of our central nervous system, our autonomic nervous system, which could be a whole nother conversation, but it's one of the main parts that we actually can deliberately manipulate. We can change how we breathe. We can change whether we're holding our breath, breathing deeply, and that has other impacts on our physiological system, on our nervous system as well. And so, like, you can't really change maybe some intense Buddhist monk who's been meditating in a cave for 20 years can change their digestive system. But most of us have no influence over that. Most of us have very little influence over our heart rate, and all these other processes our body are going through all the time. But our breathing, we can manipulate, we can adjust. And so we can use that as a way to, one, and this is most important for the practice, is just to anchor our awareness, to give us something to focus on. But two, we can also start to practice building the skills to calm ourselves down. Maybe sometimes we need to escalate ourselves up. Like, I think a lot of people with chronic depression devalue our ability to really ramp our system up if we learn how to do it. But it's right. A skill set. Same with anxiety. You know, like a lot of people devalue and haven't developed the ability to calm themselves down when needed. So that I believe that we have this capacity, just most of us haven't worked it. You know, and for veterans out there, if you're not exactly sure what I'm talking about, think about being on the firing range, right? That's like the most mindful place you'll probably find most veterans, because there's pretty much three simple things they're focusing on, which is that clear front sight picture, the breath, and the slow, steady squeeze.
Right.
And if you're thinking too much...
And that's a Marine that just told you that, so... Better believe he knows what he's talking about.
if you're thinking too much when you're on the firing range, watch your shot pattern, right? Most likely, unless you're highly, highly trained, you're going to be wandering all over the place. And so that, I think, is a good analogy for life. If we don't have that clear front sight picture, if we're not have a slow, steady breath and a slow, steady squeeze, we're going to be shooting all over the place.
So let me touch on this, because my viewpoint came into being from listening to an audiobook. Have you ever heard of Jocko?
Yeah. I just listened to him on the way here.
Did you?
Yeah.
That dude he's amazing. And so it's the categories of veterans that are out there. You know, we can break, I think I can, not being a mental health professional, I can break them down into two people, right? Two categories. Jocko's in one of them. I own everything I do. I'm the master of the fucking universe. Come at me. I'm going to conquer you too, right? That dude is an A++ personality. So there's those people who refuse to allow any type of stimuli to negatively affect them. One of the biggest words he uses is good. Okay, mm-hmm. Shit's going down. It's a bad day. Good. How do I turn that into something positive for me? But then in the other camp, you've got the people that say, okay, shit's going bad for me. Crap. Everything falls apart. How do we find a common balance between that extreme, good, things mm-hmm. are horrible, and the other extreme of things are going bad and I don't know how to deal?
Yeah, so I would say, in my mind, and I started this very early on in my career, and I'm glad I did, because it served me so well as a professional and in my personal life, is I put everything on a continuum, right? With one end, or not everything, most things on a continuum. So with one end, you have someone like Jocko, who not only practices, but encourages extreme ownership.
Sure. That book was awesome, by the way.
Yeah. It's a great book. And his podcast, man, I've gotten so much out of his podcast. And the one I just listened to is on the Marine Corps Fit Rep. And man, I told my wife, it hit me in the heart, man. But it was really good. And so
shout out to Jocko. I highly doubt he's ever going to listen to this, but yeah. If you do,
yeah,
you're doing good stuff out there. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you watched his YouTube video, Pawn?
I very rarely watch stuff on YouTube.
Check it out, though. It is killer.
I just think I'm more checked in and focused when I'm listening to it. And there's not like if I'm on the tractor out in the yard cutting the yard, there's very few stimuli going on. And I get to focus on it. It's just the way I absorb that kind of media. Or in the truck, you know. Yeah, there's all kinds of things happening, but I'm focused on some, you know, listening to this cat trying to process what they're saying.
Yeah. So then on the other side of that spectrum is basically everything's happening to us.
Sure.
And we're, you know, I don't want to say victim mentality, but I mean, maybe that's a part of it. Which then, you know, you bring it back to psychotherapy world. I think this kind of relates to what's called the locus of control, which is some people who just believe they have almost no control over what's happening in their lives or their internal environment. And then you have people who actually have a pathological belief about control and that they can.
What does that mean?
Like they're just in control of everything, you know, and everything that can manifest in, you know, 100 ways, but that everything's their fault or everything is their responsibility, or, you know, like when we just feel like we can control things we can't.
Sure. Okay.
Probably the most common thing, and this, I, again, ties into kind of like one of those things that we can do for ourselves, no matter who we are, but, you know, for veterans, that I talk about this, hopefully with most veterans, is what is in our control and what is out of our control.
Sure.
And then we focus our energy on what we can control and don't get too wrapped around the hinges of things that we can't control. And I think going back to Jocko, I think he would say, yeah, that's the process. Another thing about Jocko that I really like is that even though he's he's maybe sharing these ideas about extreme ownership,
sure,
about leadership, about taking responsibility for our lives, maybe, and our personal growth. But if you listen to him deeply enough, you'll hear that he's actually very humble, and he admits that, you know, he came up with a lot of these because of his own limitations and his own weaknesses. And so to keep himself accountable to himself, again, not to speak for you, Jocko, but that he's developed these practices and he's developed this discipline. And to me, I think that's got to be the foundation.
Have you ever seen his Instagram feed?
Just the watches.
it's fucking watches, man. The dude wakes up at 4:30 every morning and takes a picture of his watch.
Yeah.
I
was running on a trail in Sandpoint.
Yeah.
And you know, I got there at 5 o'clock in the morning to go run up this hill. And I knew that somewhere on the trail was another Marine who was up there running, because I saw, you know, Marine Corps sticker on the back of his vehicle. And so when I passed him on the way up, and I was huffing and puffing, so I didn't say anything, but then I caught him at the parking lot. And we're chatting, and he was talking about how that picture of the watch was so motivating for him, because
right. He
was still actually transitioning out of the Marine Corps and into another branch of service, and had a lot of career ambitions and that kind of keeping himself accountable to getting up at a certain time so he could fit everything he needed to
doing work, man.
Yeah, to get after it.
Doing work. Have we completely abandoned? Have I sidetracked you enough that we have stopped or abandoned camaraderie?
Well, yeah. Completely. No, I don't think so, man. I think that this isn't, like, ideally our camaraderie is people who we're sitting face to face with or we can go do stuff with. That's ideal. But man, the internet is a crazy thing, and we can find inspiration and motivation and get better ways of thinking and doing and relating to these things all over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to that, it's like, I've actually, in conversation referred to guys like Jocko and other people I listen to as my mentors.
Right on.
Cause I've learned so much from them. I've never met them. I probably never will meet them, but, I just get so much from them and things that I haven't found in other places of my life. So I think that that kind of ties in. We're using other human beings to promote our journey in a direction that's meaningful to us. And so I don't think it's totally abandoning.
Okay.
You know?
I didn't want you to go, you know, listen to this tomorrow and say, shit, he did it to me again.
Yeah.
So I want you to take a look at your watch. I know you're on a time schedule. How much more time do we have with you today before we wrap this up? And I want to make sure we're hitting the things that you want to talk about.
Yeah. So I got about a half hour.
Okay.
Before I got to be on the road.
Can I ask you this? Are you actually going to, this is your second podcast. Are you completely an addict now? Do you think in your mission in life that this would be a beneficial thing to to do. And
yeah, 100%, man. I am a consumer. I drive a lot. And like when I'm doing dishes or mowing the lawn, I'm plugged into podcasts or audiobooks. And I've for a long time wanted to kind of share my voice in the public domain. And, you know, one of the things like I think about frequently is right now I just kind of consider myself in the trenches, and I got so much work in front of me mm-hmm. that it's hard to find time to do things like this. But I definitely want to create content, I guess you'd say. I definitely want to put some thoughts out there. And part of that is I've consumed so much and I haven't found exactly what I'm looking to hear yet. I mean, I get bits and pieces, like Jocko's a piece, you know.
Sure.
Some of the other shows I listen to, they're pieces of it. But I haven't found exactly what I'm looking for. So for me, that's kind of a motivator to create something so that if it's not there, if what I'm looking for is not there, that's
yeah, you find it. Yeah. That's the almost the definition of entrepreneurship is
yeah.
I saw a hole, I decided to fill it.
Yeah. And I could go off on a tangent on that I think ties right into what we're talking about.
So, you know what? I think this is a really good spot is I'm going to insert a commercial here. And that commercial is all about getting that podcast off the ground. So, all right, we're back.
Right. So, the idea that I would like to get out to the world that I'm not hearing, and I hear it in bits and pieces, is that your mental health is not guaranteed. Your physical health is not guaranteed, and your safety is not guaranteed. All these things are not guaranteed, and I could go on. But the main thing is that your mental and physical health are not guaranteed. So
they're guaranteed, just maybe not guaranteed the way you want them to go.
Right.
You exactly. will have physical health. You yeah. will have mental health. Is it within your realm of acceptability?
Exactly. I mean, if we acknowledge that those things aren't guaranteed to be what we would like them to be.
Sure.
Right. Then we have to take a certain amount of ownership over them, and then we have to start taking action. And so one of the underpinnings of my professional view is that our internal environment is a constant process. It's something that's always happening, and we can guide that in a way that eventually creates an internal environment that serves us, or we can let it do its thing and get the results, you know,
sure.
of what that is. Same with our physical health. We can try to guide that in a way that better serves us, or we can kind of just see what happens, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, when the thing I tend to see out there that, like I was talking about that, is what maybe a different message I would be communicating or I'm looking for is, you know, so you see these things like it's pretty extreme now, man, like where there's people encouraging people to be so productive or so physically fit that it's hard to find something that's just a message of take care of yourself psychologically, help yourself meet your goals or your aspirations. And that's not just in achievements, but that's living your values and being the person you want to be.
Yeah.
And taking care of your body in a way that you learn to enjoy having your body, that your body is something that serves you well in this lifetime, and have a relationship with your body, have a relationship with your internal environment. Because we spend so much time with them, we might as well be improving our experience.
Sure.
But again, it's not guaranteed to be what it is, but we want it to be. So we got to kind of learn how to do that. And so tying this back into,
I don't know if a former military or a veteran would necessarily not know how to improve body function unless you're just so broken. Well, it's a matter of what you eat and what you do, right? I mean, when you boil it down to the simplest elements, what are you putting into your body? What are you putting it through? That's the body you're going to end up with.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I learned a lot of, so when I got in the Marine Corps, I went from not being very athletic. I was strong, but I was never very athletic. And I wanted just to excel at everything.
Sure.
So I just figured more is better. Get after it. Start now. And I broke my body down in a way that, like, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I was so stiff and immobile. I was much bigger than I am now, like just solid, you know, pretty solid muscle. But it wasn't real effective muscle, and everything, I ached a lot.
Right.
And it took me like most of my late 20s, early 30s to learn how to really listen to my body, how to move my body better, how to help myself rehab from injuries, you know?
Sure.
Like, I think we have that capacity to focus on strengthening things, identifying if it's actually something that needs medical care or if it's something that just needs improved mobility.
Sure, sure.
And strengthening. And so to me, it's was more about developing a relationship with my body than continuing just to force my body into.
That sounds very touchy-feely for a Marine.
Yeah, and I think
sorry, this is me being a dick.
Well, I tell you, man, it's pertinent because I'm sure there's a lot of veterans out there who are thinking that. But how's your body feeling right now, right? How's your relationship with your body? And then I think that this ties into how we can actually readjust after combat is really being mindful of our bodies and trying to make them strong as possible, flexible as possible. As mobile as possible. And once we start doing that, we'll get a whole bunch of benefits because our pain levels start to maybe go down. If our pain level doesn't go down, at least we can learn how to move better. So
sure.
We're not re-injuring ourselves. And so there's that whole piece. And then the internal environment. And really, you know, this applies to every human being. And I think with combat veterans, again, we talked about last time, most of them, and you know, we also talked between our conversations, we talked about law enforcement, first responders.
Right.
So every human being has to deal with these five things: thoughts, images, memories, emotions, and sensations. All right. All of us have those happening all the time in our internal environment. And when you send someone into traumatic experiences like combat, like responding to vehicular accidents or standoffs, or even just, you know, I talked to some MPs, you know, that had to go on base and see some horrific child abuse and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, all those things add to our human experience, but some of those things we don't have the capacity to relate to effectively.
Sure.
So, and then you accumulate those things without improving your capacity to relate effectively to those memories now, or to maybe the emotions or sensations you experienced in those events. Now, we've taken on basically, you know, a weight that we don't have the emotional capacity to lift, or that's affecting us in a way that we don't have the awareness to identify. So, in my mind, is that, you know, and my message, I guess you'd say, is that if we want to take full ownership over our experience and move in this lifetime to improving the way we deal with our thoughts, images, memories, emotions, sensations, we got to start doing some work, right, to identify what we're thinking, identify how our memories are impacting us, how our emotions are impacting us, how we get hijacked by sensations when something happens. You know, I think we talked about the firework thing last time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How, you know, fireworks are pretty benign, but it connects us to a reaction that we've had before, and we get hijacked by that, And then we blame the firework, not our ability to recover from that physiological stimulation.
Right.
So I think, and here's, I just want to throw a caveat, man, because when it comes to talking about combat veterans, one of the challenges is that there's almost like can get kind of protective over the experience, you know, where
you're talking about me right now.
Yeah, where it can be like maybe something that we can't talk about openly because we don't want to offend any veterans. So, because again, there are times when we're fully hijacked, so we can't really say it's our fault yet until we've expanded the ability to not get hijacked by that. So I don't want to dismiss anyone's experience, but I also want to encourage people to take ownership of that and get to work improving their lives and improving the way that they deal with these things.
You know, can I pivot from a non-clinical viewpoint here? So I like what you're saying. And I've certainly tried to implement that in my own getting after it, right? As veterans, we know if I want to max out my physical fitness test, what do I got to do? I got to practice. If I need to shave a minute and a half off my run, there's only one way to do that. And that's I got to go run, and I got to run hills. I got to run fast. I got to run slow and long. I got to do a bunch of different running to knock that minute and a half off. If I want to do 50 more pushups so I can max out my PT test, I got to hit the bench. I got to hit, you know, the triceps and the delts and do a lot of pushups. How does someone get those reps in to conquer what you're talking about? Because I don't think there's anybody, at least I would hope not, that would say, okay, I am satisfied being completely lost when this thought happens or this external stimuli happens and I get this reaction. So how does someone do the equivalent of doing a lot of running or doing a lot of gym work in the mental health field to strengthen that muscle?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, my perspective, it first starts with awareness. It just becoming aware to the best, which again, we're always developing more and more awareness, more understanding of that experience. And I think a piece that a lot of people miss, again, not just combat veterans, just human beings, is facing the right thing, right?
What does that mean?
So if a firework goes off, it can be real easy to get pissed off at the firework or frustrated with your neighbor who let the firework off. But that's not facing the right thing. The right thing is that firework causes a physiological reaction in you that is very uncomfortable, and you haven't figured out how to relate to effectively to disassociate that stimuli from your reaction.
Okay.
So that's one thing, right?
So how does that work, right? So I would like to think that knowing it's a thing, I could just be like, okay, I'm not going to do that. But that's really not reality, right?
Well, I think you hit the ball on the head or the nail on the head, man, there is that we need to get the reps in. And that's why I talked about avoidance being the glue that holds the whole thing together, because we're not getting any reps in. We're getting the opposite. We're reinforcing. When we avoid, we're reinforcing those associations and those patterns. So
go to a 4th of July fest and sit under the fireworks?
Right. But by getting the reps in, I would never say, man, if you want to deadlift 450 pounds, just go grab 450 pounds.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
That's a bad idea. And so we have to build our capacity to deal with certain things, you know, like, and I'll just use myself as an example. I jumped right into my career, not really thinking I would have to build my capacity to deal with the stress and exposure to trauma that I was going to have once my caseload went from an intern's caseload of 20 to I jumped up to a very high caseload quickly. And it did damage. I hurt myself in a lot of ways because I didn't give myself the ability to deal with the exposure, you know, to build my capacity to deal with the exposure I was about to put myself in. And so, I think that applies to several different things, you know? And so like, you know, one thing that can be more difficult is dealing with certain memories or images is that we don't want to just like jump right into the deep end because we might have a reaction that makes us even more uncomfortable with that thing.
Sure.
So we kind of break it off in chunks, build our ability to have unpleasant memories or difficult emotions without continuing like to get totally hijacked from it or for, you know, so for a lot of veterans, they'll say what used to ruin my month now ruins my week. That's improvement there, right?
True.
And what used to ruin my week now just ruins a day. And then it's like, oh yeah, I even forgot about that anniversary date when it just went sure. right past, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of the example of how we're building our capacity to relate to those things. But also just on the note of looking at the right thing, I think it's real common for so many of us to be, say, such and such pissed me off or is an asshole, whatever, right?
I get that a lot said about me.
Yeah, so we might be thinking that such and such behavior is a problem, but really we have no control over such and such behavior, you know, Jim's behavior, whatever.
Sure.
But what we do have is our ability to not let that person's behavior influence our behavior. And so we start with our behavior, then we let that person's behavior influence our internal environment. And again, like you said, like this isn't something we're going to achieve in our lifetime to where none of these things are problematic, but we're just learning to respond and relate to them better and better and better. And once we've done that, actually, and this is where that whole idea, which would be a whole nother podcast of post-traumatic growth comes in, is then actually now because of the adversity we've experienced, we have a larger capacity to deal with adversity, to focus on what's most meaningful in our life, to have maybe more compassion for others because we've been through the ringer ourselves. And so I think that's, again, it's like that isn't the target to shoot for because it's like the, you know, 2 mile target.
Sure.
We're just trying to knock down the 25, 50, whatever you guys shoot in the Army. I know I got
Whoa.
A little shooter closer.
You're not invited again. Here I was about to invite you for another podcast. You're bashing on my brothers.
Yeah.
No, and I can hear where you're coming from, and I think it's very beneficial to say, yeah, you have to deal with near term targets. Bloomsday, perfect example for me, right? So I went out and I ran Bloomsday last year. And I was bound and determined to beat my time. I wanted to be under 60 minutes for Bloomsday. And if you don't know, go look it up. It's not an easy race to run. And it was just for me though, but you can't, Bloomsday has a lot of difficult 50 meter challenges, right? Getting through, if you're really wanting to run Bloomsday for time, you have to dodge a bunch of people who are just out there with pom-poms and colored grass skirts having a good time. So that's one thing you have to overcome. How are you going to train for that? Long straightaways, hills, extreme hills. If you're going to beat that hill, you better go run, you know, 100 hills.
Mm-hmm.
if you expect to be getting after it instead of just doing it. And that's, to me, those are all 50 meter targets. And you know, at the end of the day, it's not a long target that you're trying to satisfy. It's just a bunch of 50 meters targets that kind of add on successively. If I can knock out 4 50 meter targets, well, guess what? That's 200 meters. And if that's the shot you wanted to take and you got good at those 4 50s, hey, you're golden. Go run Bloomsday.
Yeah, I think it's spot on. I mean, that's the process. And I think there's one thing that was showing up for me when you're saying that is though, so many of us feel like this shouldn't be a problem and then we don't approach it as such, you know? And so it's kind of allowing ourselves to be like, okay, this is a problem. And so I do need to do that training because I'm not ready to go run Bloomsday yet. And so sometimes that's that humility part, is we got to let go of our egos and acknowledge.
And the I can't, right? Because you know, you know, probably that's better than most people that, that know me well, I'm broke, man. My shit is broke. My back is jacked up. My shoulder's jacked up. And running is something that I enjoy. It's always, you know, I don't run fast, never have, but I love to go on long runs. Mm-hmm. And after I run for 45 minutes to an hour and I am done stretching out, dude, I really feel like I've done something, you know, and just the mental process of, okay, I just crushed. Even though it might not be person X or person Y's definition of crushing it, I know what I did and I know that I met my goal. And just the euphoria, really, that post-runner's high that you get to talk about, it's not just accomplishment, but it's an actual physiological response. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And it's funny, man, because in what you just said, there's so much wrapped up that if we unpack that again, two more podcasts. But
not if you start continue bashing on the army.
But you know, one piece in there is the I can't, right? And as soon as we decide that, we just shut down all the possibilities.
Sure.
And so it might not be I can the way I used to, but it might, and it might be like I'm gonna have to find some way to immobilize my shoulder. It might be I'm gonna have to talk to some people to figure out how to make this happen, you know, for all my resources. But then we get this mindset of, this is so important to me.
Right.
I'm going to make it happen. And then once we do that for one thing, we do it for five other things. And then we start to get in this mindset of, you know, adapt, improvise, and overcome. And
My God. Gunny Sergeant Highway. You said you've listened to Jocko. Have you listened to David Goggins?
Yeah, man. I actually...
good God, man.
I listened to a lot of his podcasts. And then I thought I wasn't going to enjoy his book.
Because I haven't... I've heard mixed reviews on the book. So.
Man, I got so much out of that book.
Did you?
And again, I had to, like, actually, I was looking at it on Audible, and someone said, I thought I wasn't going to enjoy this because I'd heard David Goggins talk so much on podcasts that I'd heard his story.
Sure.
And so that was the same mindset. So as soon as I read that, I was like, all right, let's see if I have the same experience. So I listened to it. It took me about maybe 45 minutes to really, like, because I can get just absorbed in a book where,
right.
See you later. I'm going to be, everything I'm doing, I'm going to be plugged in. And so then I got to that place, man. I was running, listening to it, doing the dishes, listening to it, driving, listening to it. And I got so much out of it. And I think the thing for any listeners who out there who read it, I listen to it. But the Audible version, too, is really cool because it's a blend of Audible book and podcast. It's really interesting. But at the end...
The mentality of that guy.
Yeah.
Because, and the only reason I interjected with that, because you had gone on to a thing of, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't exist in this cat's mind. It just, that's not something he allows himself to feel, is I can't, or I won't, or that's too tough. I'd love to be that mentally strong that I look at any and everything and being like, yeah, I can crush that. Let's do this. And maybe, I don't know, one day I can get to a third of his capacity to see challenges and just crush them. But
yeah, for me, again, it's not like Jocko's extreme ownership or Goggins, ability to take souls or however you would call it, you know, to like push himself. But I would say the end of the book is super valuable. So you got to get to the end to get the most value out of the book. I would say is like what those people are offering us are insights onto what might be helpful ingredients to our journey. And so not that we need to be David Goggins or put ourselves through however many ultra marathons. And
right. Need to be that person, but the methodology behind his being that person, I might be able to take a few of those attributes.
Yeah. There's something I can take from that and apply it. And I know we're coming up on time, and I think that this hits on something I tell almost all my veterans, man, is that we are constantly consuming. We are either consuming stuff that we're listening to, looking at, eating, and also thinking. And if we're consuming stuff that moves us in the direction we want to go, that makes us feel better about life, that gives us hope, that gives us inspiration, then that's the kind of stuff we want to keep consuming.
Sure.
I would assume, you know, that's the stuff I want to consume. But most of us are consuming, whether it's our thoughts, stuff we're listening to, reading, watching, even eating, is stuff that doesn't move us in the direction we want to be going. So there's so much out there right now that we can plug into that when we're consuming is going to give us that little ingredient that we didn't have before or that we knew about, but we just needed to hear someone say. You know, for me, almost everything I listen to now is something I've thought before or I kind of just knew, but I heard someone say it in a way that gave me a different realization.
Frame the picture for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to do this because I think it's an important piece of having you here. If you're a combat veteran and anything that Dante and I have discussed today or in a previous podcast is resonating with you, or if you'd like to put a finger on, you know, that thing firsthand, reach out and find your local vet center. These cats do God's work for returning combat veterans. So that's my closing piece. What do you want to close with?
Yeah, just to encourage our veterans to reach out to the vet center, to connect with other veterans, veterans service organizations, just get connected, build that support network. Even if you feel like you don't need it or you don't want it or it's not the right thing for you, it could be a valuable asset and you might get something out of it that promotes your journey, helps you in your journey. And with that being said, if you're in the Spokane area, I do want to plug one of our community partners.
Sure.
Just because they're doing such cool stuff right now. I just talked with some veterans that came back from one of their programs last night. But Veterans Community Response, I'm about to go support.
VCR.
VCR, yeah.
Veterans Community Response, if you're wanting to look that up. That's who he's talking about.
Yeah. They have this ongoing program right now, getting veterans connected with other veterans, doing community service work, and a lot of that revolves around preparing to deploy to disaster zone. And so they've already deployed 25 some deployments to disaster zone, but they're continuing to train people on chainsaws, first aid, and then get them out most weeks, especially now that spring and summer are picking up, thinning forest, doing stuff with chainsaws that helps them work together as a team. So when it comes time to deploy, they're ready to go. And I just can't say enough good about what they're doing right now and the feedback I'm getting from.
Okay, so I will piggyback on that. And I said I was closing, but I lied. So VCR is one of those organizations that we talked about last time. I think we, one of them is the K-9, right? So the, what do they call it? Operation Dog Tag?
Yep.
That's one of the organizations. There's another organization that helps veterans through fly rods and, you know, making cool fly rods and doing their own ties.
Project Healing Waters.
Yeah. So VCR is doing, it has a different approach, I think, you know, so it not only does this one thing and do that one thing really well, is they focus on a really broad spectrum of integrated healing. So you want to get back in that community of like-minded veterans? Well, they're going out there and they're actually helping people in dire need. And like Dante was saying, they deploy and they help those people. So kind of puts you back on task, you know, gives you that mission again. And they're training you to do that. But not only are they doing that, I think we also talked about like whitewater rafting last time and skiing and these weekend long veteran retreats where you're bringing in mental health professionals. You're bringing in Native American rituals that, and when I did that sweat, good Lord, man, that was moving. That was super, super moving. And so they're doing a really holistic 360 degree kind of treating the whole veteran with different pieces and parts. And you don't have to do all the pieces and parts. You can do whatever you want. And the only reason I kind of want to preface this again is because that is just another organization that relies on donations. They're not funded by the government. They're not funded to provide all these resources to veterans. They're doing it based off generosity. So if you're looking for a good cause for your money, you know, if you're one of those people who thinks giving back to your community and donating part of your money or part of your time is worthwhile, I would seriously like you to consider Veterans Community Response. I'll put a link to their nonprofit in the show notes for this. So, if people want to do that, they can go and help out.
Yeah, they're doing great work.
Anything else?
No, man, it's a pleasure to be here with you. And, thanks for having me on.
Again, I think we probably scheduled 3 or 4 more of these. Yeah. Dante, I really appreciate you coming out. So, we'll talk to you next time. For the listeners, thank you for tuning in. And check out our show notes if you want to find a little bit more information about Jocko's podcast or some of the books, or we'll put all those down in the show notes. So if you